The age-old question. This is Dr. Herbert O'Byrne, Dean of the University of Healing, with Absolute Philosopher. The age-old question. We'll be talking about these for a little while here now. But the age-old question of why are we here? What is our goal for ourselves? What is our decision, our choice, our desire for ourselves? What do we want for ourselves? And we don't really know what it is we want for ourselves. We don't really know what it is that we desire for ourselves. If you, right now, at whatever age you are, if you were to retire with enough finances to do virtually anything you want to do, Alan, please come over here. If you wanted to retire right now with enough finances to do anything you wanted to do, what would you do? You have no idea. Oh, I'd travel, I'd do this, I'd do that. That's absolute garbage. Traveling is garbage. Well, I'd buy a house. Well, that's garbage too. I would pay for my mother's hospital bills. That's garbage too. I would go and become part of the volunteer system and work in hospitals or in around the world help movements and stuff like that. That's garbage too. I would if I had the ability to do anything I wanted to do, had the money to do it, what would I do? What would I really like to do? Now, these people are not our example, but they are an example of the idea. Take a guru who is living in India, for instance, and he lives in that country, and he decides to follow his spiritual path. Now, he could be a very wealthy man, and he could have many servants. He could have a wife and children and all sorts of things. But he's going to go and follow his spiritual path. He's 40, 50, 60 years old, whatever his age, doesn't matter. So he's going to follow his path. And in following his path, he's going to look for the divine. Now he has sort of casually off and on throughout his life gone here and there looking to spiritual masters for wisdom and for guidance and for illumination, and he hasn't been successful in finding it. Some were rather nice, some were rather appealing, but nothing was what he really wanted. So he decided he's going to go and look for that acres of diamonds. He's going to go look for that elusive wealth, that elusive... He's got wealth. He's got a family. He's got a lovely home. Respected by his community. Has a good job. Runs his business, his world comfortably. But something inside him nags and says, this is not really where it's at. That's not what it is. And so he puts that all aside. He says to his wife, enjoy. And he leaves. He leaves wealth. He leaves fame, if you like. He leaves a family. He leaves comfort of his home. He leaves all of the fellowship of the friends that he has, that he has been talking to for a long time. He leaves the church people that he knows who get him into good conversations and get him thinking in nice veins. He needs all that stuff. Now, it depends on what type of a person he is, but he could go and rent himself a hotel room or a little cottage someplace out in the middle of the woods that belongs to somebody else and live there, or get a blanket or something and go live in a cave, or whatever you want to do. But What are these things that I'm saying now that he is doing? He is divesting himself of the physical, as he understands it. He's divesting himself of the physical pleasures of life, of the things that most people search after all their life and want to get, and never get there. And then a voice inside of him says, just be at peace. Just be unconditional love. Ah, yes, unconditional love. Well, he's too recently away from the world to have forgotten it. So he's sitting in his silence, in his undisturbed area. He's bought this undisturbed condition, either in a cave or in a hermitage, a cabin or something, wherever he's gotten. And he's away from the way of life. He has a creek running nearby for water, and he bought himself a supply of food, so whatever he needs, he has that. And he sits in quietness and peace and listens within. And he says, I'm still not satisfied.
Yeah.
And so, listening within, a voice comes to him and says, two words. We're familiar with the two words. Unconditional love. So the voice says, unconditional love. And he says, yeah, so what? I've heard that before. And so what about unconditional love? Well, the voice speaks to him. It's his own voice, of course. And the voice says to him, unconditional love. You created yourself. All right, now, unconditionally love yourself. Unconditionally, first, just take yourself, just yourself, and start at your toes, if you like, and start saying what wonderful toes you have. Well, this is the vehicle in which you live. You can't say to yourself, I have a wonderful spirit, because you haven't the biggest idea what the spirit is, you know. I have a wonderful mind, because again, you don't understand what the mind is. I have a wonderful gut, you know, you don't even understand what your gut is. You know, I have a wonderful elimination, circulation, assimilation system in my body. Well, that's nice too, but you don't understand that. Okay? So, you go to the temple. The temple, which is your body. It's the temple of your living spirit. And you begin to say, this is where I live. I live in this temple. Now, what do I think of this temple? Well, I think unconditionally loving. I think unconditional love about the temple, and it's wonderful. But what does it mean to think unconditional love about the temple? Well, I don't look at my toe and see a callus on it. I don't look at my foot and see a pricker there. I don't look at my body and see anything imperfect there. I look at my body and I just take my eyes of unconditional love and look at my body and say, wow, 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 is this a wonderful body or is this a wonderful body? How great this is. And I look at my toes and I look at my knees, and I look at my head, I look at everything about me. I get a mirror, you know, and I look and look and look and say, wow, wow, wow. I don't need a mirror really, but if I have one, that's nice too, but wow, wow, wow. And I'm unconditionally loving myself. I'm not saying I love you because you work smoothly. I'm not saying I love you because you're a pretty body. You know, because I've been in the world. I've seen pretty bodies. I've seen the ideal bodies, well developed, just perfect in every shape, way, form, you know. Beautiful bodies, beautiful bodies. Usually they're on young people too, you know. And usually they're at the peak of their performance time, you know. And the next day they start going downhill because they don't keep up that peak of performance. Now, how do they get that peak of performance? Well, as they were getting to that peak of performance, they were thinking to themselves, so what does a good body look like? A good body's got good muscles, a good body's got good form, a good body's got lovely skin. You know, the doctors say you pinch the skin and it comes back in a moment or two, it's healthy skin, you know, and, you know, all these little things. Well, I don't do that. None of us pinch our skin and do these things. We just know we're perfect. We know that. And that's the way to be. We just know it. Okay. So this young person sees this perfect body, develops this perfect body, and then the young person arrives at a point of perfection, of really a perfect body, just absolutely gorgeous and wonderful and perfect in every respect, you know, inside, outside, mind, body, affairs, everything. And you like that. I like that. And so then, after the body is there, then the mind comes up with a thought, now you got to maintain this body. You got to maintain this body. You got to maintain it perfectly by eating properly, by exercising properly. You got to maintain this body by doing all these things, doing these outward things. Well, you soon tire of doing things just to perfect the body, because the body has never been that much importance to you. It's important to look good, but just young people always look good, you know. Okay. So now, how do you maintain the temple of the living God, and how do you keep it beautiful? Well, if you want your wife or your husband or your children to be good-looking people, what do? To them? You praise them. You praise them night and day. You say, son, you are a handsome young man. Son, you are a strong and vital young man. Daughter, any boy who comes along and doesn't fall in love with you madly right away, I would be surprised, but he's going to always see your spiritual qualities, your dignity. He's going to see your beauty. He's going to see your magnificence. He's going to know that you are determined what friendships you're going to have. Forget the relationships time. You determine what friendships you're going to have. And you're the master there, sweetheart, you know. And to his wife, he says, I married an angel. I married the most beautiful, gorgeous creature on earth with the most loving, caring mind, the most loving, caring sensitivity. You are fabulous. You're wonderful. If every day he came home to his wife and said that to her, wow, she would soar through all eternity to be the most perfect. Not because she wanted to, but because that's the way she would see herself too, because she sees herself in the eyes of her beloved, and her eyes of her beloved see her the same way. Now, what if a wife would say to her husband, dear, you look more handsome every day, you look more slim every day, you look more trim every day, you're a fabulous guy. And he's starting to put on a little beer belly, you know. And so she says, I love you. And she doesn't see that beer belly. She just absolutely, unconditionally loves that man. And she tells him so. And she means it. How long would that beer belly last? No longer than a flash of an eye. The seeds are planted. Now, this fellow goes off by himself, or a woman, doesn't matter, goes off by himself, and they're off in their hermitage, they're off in their retreat, whatever it may be. It could be a hotel room, everything paid for, you know. Could be a mountain cabin, could be a tent. A lot of people like to go camping in tents and things like that. Could be a cave, could be out in the open field. The pygmies in Africa are a beautiful experience of this. They live in the barren areas of Africa, and there's not much there to eat, to find, but they do well. They're little people, and they do well. They have no clothing, not even a loincloth. They have no clothing. And they live this way, and have lived this way for a long, long time, centuries. And nighttime comes, they just lay down on the ground, wherever they are, curl up or lay flat, whatever they feel like doing, and they sleep. Most natural, heavenly sleep. In the morning, they wake up, I feel so good. They don't feel the lumps of the bumps of the dirt underneath them. If there were any, they might have just smoothed it out, but they don't care. They are untouched by their environment. Now, in the same light, they are untouched by their body. They are living in this hot, arid countryside with very little water and no clothes and nothing to protect them, and yet they're healthy, strong, family-oriented. They do everything that a normal family anywhere else would do, loving, caring. They're not possessed by their body. So, what are they possessed by, if anything? Perhaps nothing. But do they listen to their inner voice? Oh, you can be sure they do. You see, they're living out in the desert, and part of their survival is to hear everything. Hear every sound that's around them, not with fright, but with alertness. And then, once you find out what that sound is, then you respond to it as it is there. Now, we have our man off into his retreat, searching for who am I, why am I here, what's my purpose in life. And then the man is, he's got his body in order, he's got his mind in order, he's got himself in order, he's at peace, he's a living peace. And then he says, boing, a thought goes through his mind, and he remembers how people sometimes were warring with one another. And he thinks, war. I see peace everywhere. I am the creator of my world. I am the creator of everything that exists. I see peace. And so, in his mind, he creates peace. He had the illusion of war. He was well aware of it because he was a man of the newspapers and magazines, you know. And so then he began to think peace. And that became his way. Everywhere around him was peace. The animals were living in perfect harmony. Everything was in perfect harmony. He was harmonious with the weather. He was just perfect in every way. Everything was ideal. And in his world was peace, because he created it that way. Now, was the rest of the world peace too? Watch it. Everything was peace, because there is no rest of the world. There is no other world than our world. Now, what's our purpose in being here? Is it to be part of the game of life and to be aware of all of the things that we're playing, all of the illusions that we're playing, and empower them to be negative in any way? Or is our purpose in being here to be the master that we are, to think our thoughts and determine what it is that are the things of value to us, where we really want to go, what we really want to do? And what we really want to do is, number one, be yourself and have fun. Number two, be yourself and have fun. Number three, be yourself and have fun. And what is being yourself and having fun? That's living harmoniously with your universe. And of course, the word harmonious is incorrect, because there's no harmony or inharmony or out of harmony. There is only an isness. So perhaps the term might better be living in isness with all of your universe and who you are. Now, you see, when we start thinking in those frames of reference, we let go of needing to get out there and do something to make something happen. And we say to ourselves, okay, why am I really here? What do I really want to do? We had a lady who contacted us through Christie, that she was very eager to come and attend the seminar. The seminar was just so potent to her, so important to her. And then she started listening to our tapes. And our tapes are all very powerful too. And as she listened to them, she became empowered with the brilliance and the wisdom of her own inner self, and she decided not to come to the seminar. Now, I think that's just beautiful. Because not coming to the seminar, what happens to her? Not coming to the seminar, what happens to her? What happens to her is that she doesn't get the workshop. She doesn't get the practice of it. She's only putting the thing together in the frame of reference of what she's doing. And that's wonderful. That may be all that she can handle. But if you are a sincere mama, daddy, whatever, parent, you don't say, my son or my daughter cannot handle going into class with all those other children who are not as snooty as we are. And so the mother doesn't take the child to that school. Now, who is the loser? The child. Because the child doesn't gain the benefit of the interaction with the other students. Or is the child the winner? Because the mother doesn't inflict the child into an environment that is normal, human, interactive, an environment where you learn to get along with other children, where you learn to cooperate with the rules, you learn to do everything. And of course, if the mother really is playing the game I'm saying she's playing, then the mother would be saying, no, I don't want my child to get involved in that. I want my child to know that he's God. He's the master of his world. Every thought he thinks, he brings into motion. He does not want to get along with other children. He is the child, and he is the other children. He is the all. Any child that comes into my child's awareness, or my child's world, immediately bows down and kisses their feet, so to speak. Immediately they recognize here is a master, not superior to them, but here's a master, someone that can teach them something, someone that can show them something. And when you have a master, then what happens? The master is not somebody who's taught by somebody else. He listens to that self within himself and follows that self within himself and goes by that self within himself. Perhaps that's what should be taught in our schools. But it cannot be taught until the teachers believe that, until the teachers realize you're being yourself and having fun. Now, are you ready to live in such a world? And obviously you're not. Obviously you're not. You spend more time every day on doing the necessary things to have life function than you do on the things that is indeed the function of life. The function of life is our word, our thought, our action, our deed. Anything other than that is not the function. Anything other than that is not the function of life. The function of life is what is going on inside of us. Now, you all get so excited whenever we say, wouldn't it be nice to have a school of the master for children? Wouldn't it be nice to have 12 test tube babies taught that they are the Christ child and that each one is absolutely perfect and absolutely glorious and absolutely wonderful, right where they are, right what they're doing, and they can do no wrong because they are not wrong. They are only good. And if we were to teach them, well, why don't you start teaching yourself that way now? You can teach yourself because it's not too late. See, you got another half a second to live before you die, you know? You got half a second. And what's a half a second? Eternity. There's no time. No? Everything is now. So, you say, my God, that lady is 85 years old and she's going to go and have a new set of teeth in her mouth? What's wrong with her? She's going to die soon and what a waste of money on the teeth. Or that guy, he's 98 years old, and he's having an operation. He's having an operation. Most people die at that age and get it over with, you know. He's having an operation, and he's going to live longer. But the operation only gives him an extended life span of 2 years. Well, that's not in his consciousness. He's going to have that operation because he thinks it'd be interesting to have that operation. And then when he has the operation, then what's going to happen to him? Is his lifespan going to be extended 2 years or 2 eternities? You know, whatever you choose. You name the time, you name the life, you name the experience. Now, I want to live every moment of my life happy, wholesome, healthy, dynamic, enjoyable, powerful, fully aware of myself and delighting in myself until the moment I step into another dimension from this dimension. And who knows when that'll ever be, you know. But this is the wonderful thing of it. Where are you? Where am I? What's going on in our world? What's the thing that turns us on? And then you ask that question. And that's what you stop and say, okay, I've got everything. I've got health, I've got wealth, I've got friends, I've got good body, I've got good family, I've got everything anybody could ever want. I have everything, but I'm empty inside. How do I fill that emptiness? Well, you certainly don't fill it, if anything, in the outer. What that emptiness is like a balloon inside yourself. That balloon is fuller and fuller and fuller, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you don't let it out in your life, then it'll burst. And that balloon is bliss. And that bliss grows within every one of us. And then somebody comes up to you and says, who do you think you are, God? And they push a little pin into your bliss. And your bliss goes, well, everybody's God. Everybody's. You don't say everybody's God. You say, yes, I am God. You stand up for it. Yes, I am me. Yes, I did whatever I did. Yes, I didn't do whatever I didn't do. Yes, I am me. Yes, I stand up for who I am. Yes. And if you can do that, then you will begin to know what life is all about. And what life is all about is a very, very, very happy time. Very fulfilling time. Very rewarding time. But it's only for those who are willing to take the step and know it. Are you ready for that? Okay, go. Do it. And know that I love you. I love you. I love you. While you do it.
And I love you.